there, you are listening to the Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming at kmuz.org. This is where Marion and Polk Soil and Water Conservation Districts and OSU Small Farms Program shine a light on partnerships and programs that conserve our beautiful natural resources in the Willamette Valley. We're illuminating our collective mission of conserving soil, water, and natural resources for urban and agricultural audiences in the Willamette Valley. I am your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator with the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Happy autumn, everyone. Thank you for tuning into this episode of Conservation Spotlight. One thing that I've learned in my job as the outreach coordinator is that it's so much more fun working with others and you can accomplish so much more. And the district has been lucky enough to work with the folks from Elderberry Wisdom Farm. Today, I'm in the KMUZ studio, joined by Rose Hybear, the executive director, and Joaquin Ocaña, the Native Plant Nursery Coordinator. Welcome to Conservation Spotlight, Rose and Joaquin.
Well, yeah. Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Yes. We've worked together on a few things, on a camas dig in Dallas and organized David Lewis's TEK presentation in Salem, some service projects with your interns. And they'll be coming to help at our native plant sale next week, so I'm so excited for that. Mm-hmm. And actually, Rose was featured on a previous episode of Conservation Spotlight a few years ago, but a lot can happen in a few years. I thought it would be nice for folks to get an update because your organization has grown in terms of its programming, team, and activities. So let's jump right in and hear about all the good things that you're doing. Rose, for those unfamiliar with Elderberry Wisdom Farm, can you give us an overview of how it got started and what your goals and mission are?
Well, yes, and thank you. I just have to say that it is great working with the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. We've had such a wonderful time every time we partnered on something, so I'm just really happy to be here today, and I just want to say thank you for the partnership.
Absolutely.
So we're young. We just formed in 2019. The source of it was had been told a decade prior to move out of Portland, you know, kind of like by the spirit world, and to find a place in rural Oregon where I could teach other people, teach Native people how to grow food so they didn't have to starve to death down the road. And so it took me a while to move out of Portland, but I made it in 2017, and we've been working since then with a greater number of partners. In order for a small Native American nonprofit to survive, we really rely on our partnerships. We learn their conservation methods and we share our traditional ecological knowledge. So our focus is on, you know, restoring local habitats in partnership with organizations such as yourself and integrating our, you know, not just our principles, but also our practices. Mm-hmm. So I don't know if that makes sense or not, but our goals are, you know, we're working in habitat restoration, native plant nursery work. We have two native plant nurseries we're forming in the next 2 years. And also in urban forestry. We're also doing organic gardening.
That's so exciting. I know that TEK, or traditional ecological knowledge, that internship is central to your mission. What was the vision behind it? How has it evolved? And maybe what has surprised you most about it?
I think more and more of the world is recognizing that Indigenous people have a place in our ecosystems. And so we all have our own definition of TEK. Mm-hmm. You know, it's a bit spiritual. So our connection with the spirit world, our connection with our ancestors, and the way that our ancestors lived, that is the heart of TEK. So it's not just agriculture and horticulture practices out in our local ecosystems, but it's also our ceremonies, our songs. It's in our traditional stories. I heard a woman from Arizona once say, Even our children's lullabies are to EK, because we would bring our babies out into the forest as we were harvesting or whatever, and we'd put them, you know, in their cradle board up on a tree, and they would be swinging in the breeze, and we'd be working away. And so the songs we were singing was not just a harvesting song, but it was also a lullaby to our babies.
Oh.
So it shows you a deeper side of TEK.
I love that. Joaquin, what has been your involvement with the TEK internship?
Well, so the last few weeks, we've been doing a ton of stuff. And a lot of it is working on the nursery. So, you know, we had these, we found out a couple weeks ago we were really prone to getting this disease, this fungal disease called Phythophthora. And so we were like kicking into gear. Rosa's like, we got to get this done. Laying down cardboard and mulch and then pallets on top. And that's just like, you know, work. But I think the biggest component behind it all is the spiritual part, like Rose is saying, because there's always going to be the work. There's always going to be like doing that kind of stuff, or potting, or being out planting stuff, or, you know, the not so exciting stuff of like, you know, just grabbing like wood piles that have been, you know, thrown around that need to be cleaned up. But I think always keeping in mind like what the vision is, or where, what our intentions are, that's like, that's part of the TEK, is having that connection to something a little bigger than, you know, just the, you know, the work.
Having purpose is great motivation.
Yeah, definitely.
And you started out as an intern, right?
Yeah, I started out as an intern in April and then finished in May. And then afterwards, I got hired.
Cool.
Yeah.
Rose, from a big picture perspective, how do you see Elderberry Wisdom Farm integrating cultural values, ecological restoration, and also the economic opportunity for Native communities in this region?
All of that. We just keep building the program to the point where we're going, whoa, how am I going to get that done? But, you know, I think the whole thing is the cultural values that you talk about, we also call them spiritual qualities. So our people have this innate gifts inside of them. And we made this remarkable discovery recently, which is people are part of the ecosystem. You know, we've always looked at ourselves separate from, but we're actually, there's a world order that is all harmony, including people being part of. And our relationship with the earth is we're the grandchildren. And so most people have always believed that we have dominion over the earth, and that got us in a bit of trouble, you know, if you look over the centuries. And so our belief is much different. We have a respect for the land and a love for the land, a desire to give to it and its restoration instead of trying to get something off of it or out of it. You know, so that's, you know, that's sort of the heart of our work, our internships. We, when we recruit and hire our interns, we really, most of them are Native American and people of color, although white people are people of color too. It's the white color. That's another color, you know. All of mankind is united, and we can't really discriminate by color or whatever. But whenever we recruit and hire our interns, we look to their ethnicity. We look to their original ancestry. And a lot of the work that we do with them is to bring healing to them. Most of our interns have said that they feel a bit of imposter syndrome, that they really don't feel Native because we were forced to become something that we weren't. And it's taken a few generations for us to return to having a value, you know, really having a strong cultural identity. And so what that does is when we raise their awareness of that, it strengthens their self-esteem and their work ethic goes up. They just want to get out there. Like Joaquin is a great leader of our team, by the way. Unbelievable. I was just so grateful that he came into our life. He works with a team and they do so much work. You know, you turn your back on them and you turn around and the work is done. I don't know how they can work so well, but you know, I think a lot of it is his leadership. So we're just blessed to have everybody that we work with.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. So it's so much more than just a farm. You're building a community and making a huge impact on everyone's lives that are involved. I remember that you told me about seeking organic certification, which is an interesting, can be challenging journey. Do you mind speaking a little bit about that? Like, what were the hurdles and what has gotten you through this process?
Well, I remember about a decade ago, Portland Bureau of Environmental Services put on Invasive 2.0. And so they were really looking at the invasives they were spraying, herbicides, pesticides, whatever. And so I was invited to speak. They probably reconsidered that later because I got up during my time and started with a drum song. Mm-hmm. And then I said, I'm here to ask you to please stop spraying.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it just comes natural to us that this is our oldest grandmother here. I'm not going to put poison on her. And so mm-hmm. we do manual removal mm-hmm. and it can be permanent. People think that it takes too much time. But when your ultimate goal is to strengthen the biodiversity of the soil, you're going to want to transition to organic. Mm-hmm. So we actually have a relationship with Oregon Tilth, and we're trying to get tribes in Oregon, Washington, and Idaho to transition to organic. And so it's just fundamental to us that we do that for as many people as possible.
And what organization are you getting the certification through?
It's through Oregon Tilth.
Okay.
Yeah.
Wonderful. So what advice would you give to other indigenous or small-scale farms who are trying to go that organic route, both in terms of mindset and practical steps?
We just use ourselves as an example. So we're transitioning to organic right now. It's difficult. They gave us about 14 forms to fill out. It took us about a year because I kept putting it off to the side. It's a rigorous process, but we're in the middle of it and we're continuing. And so what we give advice to other people is just see what we're doing. You know, when we harvest our blue elderberries, they are going to be so rich in nutrients, you know. And so we need to know that in order to feed the human body, we have to have the very best soil, the very best plants possible. And it just, you know, it's a no-brainer, to be honest with you. We can't think otherwise. So I just think a lot of our business is also social and economic, mm-hmm. and we're trying to train Native people to own their own business, and we've actually formed 3 LLCs that they can learn to become owners and operators in.
Yes. I'd love to try that elderberry someday. So what are you using it for to make? Are you freezing them, and then what is the process after that?
We freeze immediately, so mm-hmm. we're really into the safety factor. It has cyanide in it, and so we have to heat it to a certain extent, but we don't want to heat it too far. So we go up to about 185 degrees with our juice, and then we drop it back to about 180, and we keep it there for 40 minutes. Then you've got cyanide-free syrup that's healthy, builds the immune system. They even say, I have to do a disclaimer, it hasn't been proven yet. Mm-hmm. But, it's supposed to help with cognitive decline, help with diabetes, help, in healing in so many ways. Mm-hmm. The elder flower is totally amazing as a medicine. Mm-hmm. So we look at the medicinal value of it, and we try to offer that, to the public, to our local customers, that is. We're very locally sourced.
Yes. So eventually we could purchase it through your website.
Yes, we give it away all the time, by the way. Just come by.
Okay. That's elderberrywisdom.org?
Let's see, is that it? Yes, that's right. .org, O-R-G.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Just a quick update, if you're just joining us, I've been talking with Rose Hybear and Joaquin Ocaña from Elderberry Wisdom Farm about their programs, projects, and ways they're working to conserve our natural resources. And you're listening to Conservation Spotlight, a regular segment of Willamette Wake Up on KMUZ Community Radio, 88.5 and 100.7 FM, and streaming on KMUZ.org. I'd love to shift over to talk with Joaquin for a little bit.
Yeah.
The Native Plant Nursery at Elderberry Wisdom Farm has been a true organizational effort. From your perspective, what was it like to be part of getting it established, and what role have you taken on as it's grown?
Yeah, well, definitely a lot. There's a lot going on that we've done. And I think I would attribute most of, what we've done and all our growth the last few months to our interns.
Mm.
Over the summer, we had 8 interns,
mm-hmm.
And they all came every day, ready to work and excited to learn
mm-hmm.
and happy to connect with one another and just be there, and that having that energy there, that was one of the biggest things for me that was like, okay, this is really cool. Like, you know, even if we're just doing, again, things like cardboard and mulch, you know,
weed suppression is important.
Yeah, it is. Yeah, just having, you know, that community, being together, working together, that part was really cool. And then to see it all finished in the end, that part is really awesome. So for me, taking on this leadership role the last few months, there's definitely been some like struggles, and it's like, it's hard to sometimes like put your foot down, or, you know, be a lot more assertive, like, oh, I think things need to be this particular way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I don't always know if it's the right way.
Mm-hmm.
But, you know, it's a learning process for everyone. Mm-hmm. So, yeah.
So what species of plants are you growing at the nursery now, and how did you decide on which ones to prioritize?
Yeah, so lots of stuff. We have all native plants. So mm-hmm. on the tree side, we have things like grand fir and ponderosa pine, a couple incense cedar.
Mm-hmm.
Then we have tons of shrubs, things like rose or Douglas spirea, Nootka rose, pea fruit rose, some Pacific nine bark, Pacific dogwood, red dogwood, currants, all kinds of stuff.
Oh, that's
so a huge variety. Yeah.
Excellent. You talked a little bit about the fungus. I was wondering if you could speak a little bit more to managing the soil health and water needs, other resource constraints in the nursery setting.
Yeah, well, constraints, when you say that, that's definitely like water comes to mind.
Mm-hmm.
So we don't have water rights. We just have a well. Mm-hmm. That we rely on, and that's working, you know, it's been working pretty well for us.
Mm-hmm.
We've had an irrigations guy, Sean, and he's come and done almost everything for us, and part of it we did with the interns, but he set up all these systems so that we mm-hmm. can get water to every corner of the property. And it is a challenge because we can't use all of it everywhere all at once at the same time, so we can only use it in this part during this part of the day, and in this part during that part of the day, and also have to take into account the time of day so that we're not overwatering or creating mildew conditions.
Mm-hmm.
Like with the Phytophthora, we realized that 4 out of the 5 things we were doing were, you know, conditions for
Ooh.
That. Yeah, I mean, mm-hmm. that was not good. So we're like, okay, that's why we really have to get this taken care of. But it is, yeah, it is hard to balance everything and find out what is the biggest priority and what mm-hmm. maybe we can take a step back on. And
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's not always easy, but.
Maybe a question for both of you. What conservation or regenerative practices do you use at the farm?
Mm-hmm. Shall I go, Rose?
Mm-hmm.
Well, I think probably the biggest one is just what we're doing, the work itself,
mm-hmm.
is like having the plants there that may not be, you know, on our property, but it will go towards somewhere else, regenerating an
mm-hmm.
area somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we do amendments to all our plants, and again, we're trying to do everything organic. So the process of regeneration is of not killing what's already there and
mm-hmm.
trying to support what's in the ground. Yeah.
So there's been a remarkable partnership going on with the City of Salem Urban Forestry and with the Oregon Department of Forestry, Urban Forestry. So we've been meeting together, and they've actually asked to be able to use our learning model, the model we use for our internships. They want to adopt that statewide.
Oh,
and
good.
So we're actually consulting with them to determine, well, what is it? Principles, you
mm-hmm.
know, practices and all
mm-hmm.
that. And so we're beginning to work more closely together. We have great respect for their science. They are very excited about traditional ecological knowledge, and they feel like it's a wonderful fit. And so we've been blessed to have these types of partnerships. And so we're just now, right now, working with three high schools in Salem that have the lowest tree canopy neighborhoods, and working with the students and their families to build tree canopies. The urban heat island effect
mm-hmm.
is something we worry about. This summer was devastating to some people. And so we're working to build this partnership where the students of color, the Native American students and their families in those neighborhoods are in the planning. They're at the table, mm-hmm. helping to make decisions. Where are we going to put these? And just recently,
oh, wonderful.
We've asked if we can also put in community gardens right next to the tree canopy, so these same families can be have their own garden within walking distance. And the Marion Polk Food Share is very excited to work with us to make that possible. So, you know, those are the kind of things that get us excited every day.
Joaquin, I'd love to hear a little bit more about some of the projects that you're using the plants for, restoration projects on the landscape. Can you share some specific planting projects that you're excited about?
Definitely. There's two that come to mind. So even, you know, just yesterday we met with the city of Salem, Don Gunther and Mylon something, I don't know his last name. But so we met with them yesterday at Minto Brown, and they had done, you know, over the last few years, a bunch of restoration and planting there. And they had come and visited the farm and seen all our plants. And this has been a huge, you know, project that we've been working on the last few weeks, is this urban forestry program. And so the whole idea is that we want to incorporate schools and get in the classroom and, you know, educate students about, you know, why is it important to preserve our land and native plants, and, you know, get them excited about this kind of stuff. But then also not only working with the students in the schools, but also providing as much as we can these plants in urban spaces, things like the heat urban island effect and, you know, global warming, climate mm-hmm. change, like that you feel those a lot in different places, but particularly in the places that, you know, are affected the most. Like, they don't have as much tree canopy or the resources to really deal with that kind of stuff. And so that is one project I'm really excited about. So it's been a lot, and we're still in the very early stages of it. But yeah, we're like trying to get into the schools and then meeting mm-hmm. with the city of Salem to figure out, okay, where can we plant these trees, where can we plant them, especially in a way that like makes sense too. That's the hardest part. It's like you can't just like go and put a tree in front of someone's yard and be like, okay, like grow now and like
yes
be like restorative and everything like that. So that's the hard part. Mm-hmm. But the challenge is also kind of exciting.
We did an analysis of 19 deciduous trees and mm-hmm. 6 or 7 evergreen trees. So we are they climate resilient? Are they disease resistant? And how easy are they to germinate? And all of how tall are they going to be? Because we got electric poles all over the place and mm-hmm. in the urban areas. So we've been doing a lot of analysis and relying on our partners. Another project is with Pudding River Watershed Council. We got to go out and be part of their Oregon White Oak survey. Just this week, mm-hmm. and so they were doing, you know, some kind of an assessment of the Oregon White Oak in Oregon Garden, and then next week we get to go out after you. We get to join you yes. next week uh-huh. with your plant sale. Yes. So you have a native plant sale next week, and so we get to help get that set up. It's a great learning curve for us. Following that, we go up the North San Yam to the Watershed Council, and we're helping to plant Wapato where we've been removing Ludwigia. We think that planting Wapato will help to minimize the regrowth of the Ludwigia and other invasive plant species. We love those little native turtles that are there. So there are two threatened and endangered native turtles in the North San Yam River there at John Neal Memorial County Park. And we've been working there for 2 years, removing it just so we can plant the Wapato. And we think that's going to be really good for the, you know, the ecosystem on those side channels.
Do you have Wapato at the nursery?
Well, we have a couple that were gifted to us that are in, you know, so-so shape.
Mm-hmm.
But it just so happens, like Rose is saying, we are at Oregon Gardens just this past week. And we are, like, walking around doing our oak assessment survey, and then afterwards went in for lunch and then headed out one more time, and it was like pouring rain, and I can't remember her name, I feel bad, but she was giving us a tour of their filtration system mm-hmm. because they have water that they pump up from Silverton and then filter and use the gray water, and there's all these ponds and they were filled with Wapato. And she was like, they're going to be dredged in, you know, a couple months. And we'd really love it if someone came and harvested them and used them. And we were like, I was like, my gears ding, were ding, clicking. Ding. I was like, oh, I have an idea. We're supposed mm-hmm. to meet with, you know, North Sanium Watershed Council mm-hmm. on the 15th to do this, you know, Wapato planting restoration mm-hmm. stuff. And I was like, so I wrote an email. So I'm very excited. Yeah. That was the other thing that I was excited about.
I got to try Wapato recently.
Oh, yes. Nice.
We had a meeting with David Lewis, and he just happened to have some Wapato in the back of his car. You know, he's like, would you like to try it? Yes. Cool. So delicious.
Yeah, it's kind of like potato-y, mm-hmm. right? Yeah.
Mm-hmm. We call it Indian potato.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Very cool.
So Rose and Joaquin, I've really enjoyed working together. I'm so excited to have you at our native plant sale next week to help out and learn our process and continue working together. Thank you so much for being here and talking with us today. I really appreciate it.
Yeah.
This has been a fabulous partnership. And yeah. I remember about a few months ago, you asked if we could provide about 80 different species of forbs for your plant sale. We weren't mm-hmm. quite there yet. We just yes. built 10 more raised beds or recessed beds because of climate change. We're actually burying our raised beds.
Mm-hmm. Well, there will always be next year.
We're planting. We'll have about 30 different forbs in these beds. So we'll be ready in the future to serve that.
Excellent.
Need.
Yay. I've been talking with Rose Hybert and Joaquin about Elderberry Wisdom Farm's impact. And I'm your host, Morgan Neal, Outreach Coordinator for the Polk Soil and Water Conservation District. Thank you for tuning in to this episode of Conservation Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed our conversation today. Every effort matters, and together we can make a difference in conserving our natural resources. Please be sure to visit our website, polkswcd.com, for resources on how you can contribute to local conservation efforts. And Rose, the website is elderberrywisdom.org,
O-R-G.
Excellent. Also, sharing this podcast with others is a great way to spread awareness and encourage positive action. Coming up on October 18th, we are working with volunteers to install a native plant pollinator garden at the new park in Dallas. We have over 300 native plants coming to a new home. If you'd like to support our efforts, you can make a donation by going to our website, polkswcd.com. Every $5 buys a plant for the garden. And do go see the garden in spring and see everything in bloom and the happy pollinators. And if you liked what you heard here on Conservation Spotlight, tune in next month to KMUZ at 88.5 or 100.7 FM the third Wednesday every month during Willamette Wake Up. Thanks for listening, and keep up the conservation conversation.